Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Shirakabrad, here back with the original crew, Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Erson Religioso. How are you guys doing?
Good, Gene.
So Joe's back from Florida. Dr. E's back from the bubonic plague. And we are joined by a special guest. So the last few weeks, we've talked a lot of business, a lot of marketing, if you're listening to the podcast in order, which you don't have to, but if you are, if you like order in your life, that's okay. A while back, we talked to Stefania Bell from ESPN, and she covered a lot of cool topics. And then she brought up one topic, or I brought it up after I read one of her articles, blood flow restriction training. And she wrote up an article about the Houston Texans at the time, and I asked her about it, and she said, the guy you need to talk to is Johnny Owens. So I took it to heart. I reached out to Johnny, and joining us on the podcast is Johnny Owens. Johnny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And if any of your guests want business or marketing, I'm going to seriously disappoint them.
I'm pretty sure they've heard plenty of business and marketing from Jerry Durham. That's about as close to business and marketing rock star status as you can get. And they had 3 weeks of that.
Yeah.
So with blood flow restriction, let me ask you, I'm not even going to set it up because you are, as far as I know, pretty much living it and dictating it and the authority on it from what I could gather. So can you fill us in on blood flow restriction training, what it is, the science behind it, and kind of what you've been working on?
Yeah, sure. So blood flow restriction training has been around for over a decade. It started in Japan and kind of went on just in Japan without a lot of recognition throughout the rest of the world. And it was getting published in journals that were really lower tier as far as we were concerned. And, it just wasn't really getting out of Japan. And so some other groups started picking it up more and more. And some of the Japanese researchers were putting higher tier publications out, such as Journal of Physiology and Journal of Applied Physiology. And so it's starting to catch people's eyes a lot more at these big academic centers. And so I've been tracking it probably 3+ years now.
What did it start as? What were they looking for in Japan when it was just in its early stages?
You know, there's a lot of lore to it. And it's this guy Sato who started it. And he had, did some exercise and he was in like a kneeling position and that sort of occluded blood flow to his calves. And he noticed that he seemed to have a much bigger burn in his calves, and don't quote me on all this, but, he felt that effect if he was getting some sort of bigger response there. And so then he started toying around with some compression on his limbs to see if he could mimic that effect. And he did it, to the point where he actually gave himself rhabdo. And he wrote a little case study on himself where he was in rhabdo from this, but went back and kind of kept doing it. And, from that point on, it kind of more in the performance type setting, and there were, bodybuilder type stuff. It seemed like what he was looking at.
So let's give the listeners a brief actual explanation of what it is. And then before we go, you work for a government research lab. Is that right?
No, I don't actually. I do a lot of research at this place. So I work for what's called the Center for the Intrepid. And it's in San Antonio, Texas. And if anyone Googles Center for the Intrepid, there's a lot of cool YouTube videos. And it's a neat place. So about 7 years ago, this guy, Mr. Fisher, he builds these places called Fisher Houses, which are like Ronald McDonald houses for the military families when any of our guys or girls get hurt. So they have somewhere to stay while they're recovering. And he came and visited us, and he came to the PT clinic, and we were just slammed. And so I started there in about 2005, you know, we had people who were having to rehab them, plinths in the hallways and stuff like that, just because our clinic wasn't big enough. And no one was expecting this war to do what it did as far as the toll on our service members. And, you know, it's kind of funny because Desert Storm 1, everyone was freaking out and, you know, blood on the streets and, you know, the Americans are going to be coming back in body bags. And so they set up, they way over prepared for it at the medical centers. You know, then it just kind of sputtered, and you know, only a few people really came back to some of these places. So then they, you know, they kind of underprepared, it seemed like, for these conflicts. And so this guy said, you know, there needs to be a better place to rehab these folks. And so he said, if y'all can get a big donation campaign, I will donate X amount of my dollars too, and we will build a center for excellence for rehab. And they raised millions and millions of dollars. He donated a lot of money. The government actually donated the land to him so that he could get it built in 6 months, because he knew time was of the essence. So it's the first time the government's ever given military-based property to a private citizen.
That's pretty cool.
And, yeah, and then they built it, and it's now just this. It's like the Disney World of rehab. So we have a giant research arm. We have a giant rehab arm. So yeah, that's where I am, and I'm a full-time clinician. So my title is Chief of Human Performance Optimization, and I guess I
that is a hell of a title.
Yeah, right.
That might be the coolest title I've ever heard.
Yeah, right. H Papa, or I think is what someone called it. But yeah, I got to put the disclosure out here too that these are my opinions tonight, and I'm not reflecting the views of the United States government or the Department of Defense. So just get that out of the way. But so anyways, I'm a full-time clinician there, and I kind of started dabbling in a little bit of research just by luck probably about 8 years ago, and it has grown. And so now I'm almost doing more research than I am just the clinical side. But I do have a clinic all day, every day.
So when did you come upon the blood flow restriction, and when you started looking at it, what made you want to keep going with it? And again, if you can give a small breakdown of the science behind it and what it is, because I'm sure a lot of people haven't really heard. I'm sure they might have heard the term, but don't really know what it is.
Yeah, so it's pretty compelling when you look at it. Now, my EndNote library is there's over 160 published papers that I have on some form of this. And what it is putting a tourniquet proximally on a limb and doing exercise with the tourniquet inflated to a set pressure so that you can occlude or really decrease venous return while still allowing some arterial inflow into the limb. And this is a brief and intermittent type of exercise training. So, you know, our typical time under a tourniquet would be around, you know, 5 to 6 minutes per exercise. But the beauty of it is you can exercise at very low loads, 20 to 30% of 1 RMs, and get these strength and hypertrophy responses that are very similar and sometimes even a little bit better than you would with more heavy load type of strength training. So for a rehab scenario, it's kind of a perfect win-win. That, low loads, but we still get these strength and hypertrophy changes.
Have there been any, is this mainly used on soldiers? Have this been used on different populations, different injuries, different pain levels? What's the spread of some of that research?
Yeah, so the majority of it, the very vast majority of it is coming out of academic centers on healthies. Your intro about me, there's definitely other researchers out there who are the experts looking at these mechanisms and these pathways that I can hardly understand.
So when you're looking into applying this towards a more clinical daily clinicians and the physical therapy crowd, is this something that's ready for prime time? Can people start applying it?
Yeah, so I think it is. Right, and so that's what I was going to move into. As far as a clinical setting, you know, I'm probably leading the path now and taking, and I collaborate with a lot of the researchers who are doing it at the academic centers, of taking that and seeing how we can apply it clinically. So, you know, I've done it on over, I think it's 320-plus patients now. We have just had a retrospective paper come out in the Journal of Special Forces looking at chronic trauma and using blood flow restriction training for thigh weakness. we have three prospective trials that I have going right now. One's just looking at postoperative knee scopes using blood flow restriction. We're just wrapping that one up. We also did Dopplers on the calves just to make sure that we weren't showing any clotting mechanisms, which the totality of the research really shows that you're probably not by doing this. Have another prospective trial going on right now with an ACL model at starting at 12 weeks. It's a more chronic model. And then a chronic thigh weakness model as well. The diagnoses that I've been treating in the clinic, though, are all over the place. So we've done distal radius fractures, and they've done great. We're just getting ready to submit an IRB proposal to study those. Achilles, we just submitted a retrospective paper on that. They're doing excellent. We're looking at knee cartilage procedures in the knee, lateral epicondylitis of the elbow, have a submitted funding for a West Point ACL acute study. And there's even some evidence that BFR could play a benefit on bone. And so submitted a multi-center grant with eight of the largest trauma centers in the country to see the effects of blood flow restriction training after a femur fracture. And that'll be a large 4 million plus study.
Wow, that's really cool.
So are you using all different tourniquets when you're doing this, or is it, I know it's a specialized tourniquet, but are they different sizes? And
yeah, and so that's the problem. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are doing this, and if you're going to the gym and you want to try this out, you know, have at it and do what you want. But when it comes to a clinician doing it on a patient, you know, we really need to be standardized and be safe. And so that's kind of been my goal as well, is trying to find the best standardized tourniquet to use and the best limb occlusion pressure. So what we do now is we have a standard width that we use for the leg. And we have a standard width that we use for the arms. And then we'll put that onto a patient, and then we're using a handheld Doppler to measure blood flow. And we'll take the tourniquet up until we get complete occlusion of blood flow. And when we know what that number is, then we can use a percentage of that based on kind of what we've seen clinically for what area we're targeting. So for the lower leg, you know, 80% seems to do really well. If we're doing stuff on the calf and Achilles, it seems like we have to really stick at 80% limb occlusion. The thigh, we can maybe go a little bit lower. The upper extremity, they seem to not tolerate higher limb occlusion pressures as much. So
it sounds like you're trying to develop a somewhat guideline. So we have some questions from Twitter. So Cinema or at Cinema Air asks, is there general protocol guidelines for BFR? It kind of sounds like what you're describing there.
Yeah, and that's the goal. So there's a company called Delphi Medical, which is one of the largest tourniquet makers and research and developers in the world. I think they have 252 patents. Their president, who's retired now, is the guy who introduced pneumatic tourniquets into the ORs. And so they did a lot of research with the military originally, and are across the street from me is a place called the Institute of Surgical Research. And those guys linked me up with them because they have been doing tourniquet research with Delphi. And so for the last 2 years, Delphi has been kind of looking at the study protocols, and I've been giving them some guidance, and they've developed a tourniquet for the clinic setting that has actually a built-in Doppler for it. And so it's an FDA-approved medical registered device for blood flow restriction training. It's the only one there is in the world now that's medically approved by the FDA. But it's cool. The thing about it is you put it on and you hit it, and it'll tell you what the patient's limb occlusion pressure is and say what percentage do you want to use. And for us, you know, my techs, you know, they're starting to hate me because they're doing Dopplers all day. You know, they're becoming more Doppler techs than they are PT techs and PTAs. So this new one's almost ready for prime time. And, you know, probably in a few weeks, it's really ready to go. So I think for a medical setting, that's going to be the ideal way to go.
So we had a couple more questions that kind of lead into some of the stuff you're talking about. Also, Kyle Kimbrell. Mm-hmm. At Kyle Kimbrell 1 asked two questions.
Yeah, I know Kyle.
He has an impressive looking beard as his avatar.
Yeah. He looks like the guy from The Lorax.
You know, I was thinking the the guy from Mythbusters. So he asked, does BFR have a role in the rehab of, say, tennis elbow, muscle strains, etc.?
So that's interesting. Yeah, at first, I would have said no way, but Well, not no way, but it did make 100% sense when we're looking at a tendon or a tendinosis type issue. But, you know, we've had for tennis elbow, we're on our fourth case now, and the first three were these real chronic cases. And one of them was my boss, his name's Colonel Gajewski, who he had this rip roaring tennis elbow, and he's had it forever. And he's an orthopedic surgeon. He's tried everything. He's a big shooter. And, so shooting his gun all the time was causing him problems.
You're in Texas, right?
And he did it in a couple of weeks. It cleared. Oh yeah, you have to shoot around here.
Yeah, isn't that like describing?
On my side.
Isn't that like describing everybody in Texas saying he's a big shooter?
Yeah.
It's like saying, you're from Texas.
But yeah, so he got better. We had another guy who had a chronic case. He even debrided his tendon out, and he got better as well. So maybe there is some sort of strength and hypertrophy thing that we have going on with the musculature, but it could also be there's something happened on the tendon level, and we're hoping to get some animal models going to look at this a little bit. Because one thing we know with blood flow restriction is a lot of these anabolic type things, like your human growth hormone and your myostatin, they change. HGH really seems to go up quite a bit because of the metabolite buildup that you get in the muscle. But as you're looking at, more of the strength and conditioning literature and the molecular literature, growth hormone might not play that big of a role in the hypertrophy of the muscle. It seems like if growth hormone's there or not there at high levels, there's could or could not be a change. But some of our researchers are looking at some of these other things that are getting stimulated have a role in collagen synthesis and more of a recovery type thing. So that's what we're looking at. We've had real good success with patellar tendinosis as well, which was real surprising.
So taking a step back and thinking about the overall picture, which is something that Urson's really big on, is kind of applying an eclectic approach to treatments. So somebody with like tennis elbow, most times it's not just the cause of the muscle. By the time you have pain there, that's the symptoms leading up to that, and you've compensated. But it could be coming from the neck. It could be coming from segmental facilitation. It could be coming from the shoulder. I mean, it could be an actual elbow dysfunction. And by doing BFR, you're helping out. Probably there might be some pain inhibition. The muscle might not be functioning as well. There could be, again, a lot of compensatory causes to that. And just thinking about, obviously, similar to dry needling, right? There's some people that just do dry needling and that's it.
Right.
But in my opinion, it's more effective as part of a overall treatment technique and routine. And strength training, you mentioned, and makes it seem like blood flow restriction makes an obvious segment in terms of athletes and performance. But if somebody's coming in with tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis, there's other things that you want to look at, but this sounds like it could be a really good adjunct to when you do your manual or when you do your movement retraining and do this on top. Even if you have an elder population, to me it could seem like somebody that can benefit and get their strength gains back.
Right. Well, I mean, my question with Johnny, with the tendinosis cases that you saw, you said you're on your third lateral epicondylalgia. Was it just strength training that was done, or something else done while they were being occluded?
No, they're occluded and they're doing a strengthening exercise with it. So these guys were all having problems primarily with grip. And so we put the tourniquet on and had them just did a max grip, and then we had them do just a 20% max grip. And they would just do that real light kind of grip. And they weren't having, if they had pain in the tendon, we'd have them do a little bit less. And they would just primarily, you start to get this real big muscle burn. And then the muscle's real sore for a while. They took it off, the tendon wasn't really hurting them. And it seemed to have an effect. Very low numbers, and so we can't say for sure. But that, sometimes, maybe there is something a little deeper up the chain where, if they're doing the activity and they're not feeling the pain at the tendon, but they're getting a response at the muscle, maybe that kicks in something. I mean, who knows really, but their grip strengths have, all really improved and pain went down again in these very low numbers. So I'd caution anyone to to jump on it too quick with something like that. But we'd like to look at the tendon level a little bit more.
Sure. My question also, because I'm big on having basically almost every single one of my treatments not cause any discomfort as much as possible. So what does it feel like? Because obviously I've never done any kind of resistance training, you know, while being occluded.
It feels hard, and it feels like a heavy workout. And if you're a kind of person who can't tolerate a blood pressure cuff on you, you might not be a huge fan of this. But, you know, we've maybe only had two or three people who just said, I really want to do this, you know, out of whatever, so 320 something plus now. So it feels like you're lifting a lot of weight. I don't know if Stefania, we made Stefania do it, and she was dripping sweat by the time she was done.
She said, yeah, her bicep, goes up, right?
No, she did her leg.
Oh, leg, that's right, right.
Yeah. So what happens, you know, you're lifting this low mechanical load, 20-30% rep max, and the muscle, we might be becoming hypoxic. We're still trying to figure that out, but it makes sense that it is. So you start to recruit these higher motor units, you know, your type 2 fibers, and you cleave off hydrogen ions, and so the leg starts to become acidic. So you get that real, you know, lactate burn in your leg, and then you stop. And when you stop and you rest, we leave it on during the rest period. And that's important because that metabolite accumulation, if you're to lift heavy load, you're building up those metabolites, but then you rest and you flush it all out. When you rest and it's still being held in there, your type 3 and 4 afferents start to sense that acidity in the leg, and they go up to your brain and then start to release all the positive anabolics, your GH and epinephrines, and VEGF starts to go off.
So if you're doing it on the thigh, do you see that happening mostly in the closest muscle that's distal to the occlusion, or do you see the effect all the way down to the calf and all the muscles in the leg?
You primarily see it in the muscle that you're exercising.
Okay.
So if you're doing the hamstring, you'll feel the hamstring. If we're doing the calf, you'll feel the calf.
What if you're doing a squat? What if you're doing a closed chain exercise?
Yeah, you'll feel it more in the more proximal one.
Okay.
But as your volume goes up, you definitely start to feel it everywhere. And it's interesting too, because there's a little handful of articles now that looks like there's a proximal gain in strength. A couple that looked at it, and it changes in the hip in both sides and strength, as well as in the pecs from occluding. And so it could be, you know, you could see in the pecs maybe that it was your tricep just fatigued out so quick that, you know, you had to start moving into more of the pec as a primary mover. But it could also be the systemic effect, you know, of growth hormone going way up and myostatin going down, that is causing some sort of growth in a muscle that did a low mechanical load. So that's something interesting, especially for us in PT, is if there's some proximal changes that can be had with this, that opens up a whole new realm when you think about the cuff and stuff.
What's the oldest patient that you've worked with blood flow restriction?
I think it's 67. That's another study. We have one of my ortho residents, he's was selected for a NIH workshop thing where they're trying to groom him to write an NIH grant. So we're trying to get a study with total knee patients doing this. And so we've done a bunch of total knees clinically, and they love it. The older folks who come in, I mean, you would think they wouldn't tolerate it, but they really tolerate it quite a bit. Cause I think they, you know, a lot of them don't want to push a heavy load. And so you do this and it's a light load and they get done and they really feel like they've done something. And when I talk to a lot of the researchers out there who are looking at this, because one big area of research for this, is sarcopenia. And there's quite a few papers that look like there's a good response in older people. Rasmussen's group down at the Seelig Center for Aging at UT Medical Branch Galveston, they've done quite a bit on older folks, 70 plus.
And yeah, shown, I mean,
you know, really good changes in it, in mTOR. I mean, you know, they're kicking in the mTOR pathway and getting big protein synthesis changes in these older folks lifting 20% load.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a big opportunity because a lot of these older folks have
so many comorbidities that it's hard for them to lift a load that promotes strength gain, and that's what they really need, strength gain. So any opportunity that enables them to get gains at lower loads, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, the research is even showing that basically PTs don't push our patients enough, and especially elderly patients. And I think that is a really good opportunity. And you know, the fact that it can be a lighter load, and probably you also said lesser duration too, correct? And for the same gains as like a longer duration, heavier load.
Yeah, well, that's what's interesting too with BFR. It seems like you get your hypertrophy changes early, rather than a traditional strength training model where there's more of a neuromuscular effect, then a strength, you know, starts to kick in more, and then some hypertrophy. So after the first 2 weeks, we're almost always seeing some sort of change either on our functional testing or on our like Biodex measurements or one rep max testing.
Is there a way we've been pretty much talking about this as a treatment technique? Is there any application as a differential diagnosis or using it as an evaluatory tool to help maybe see which muscles fatigue quicker, see if there's an imbalance, anything like that?
Not that I've looked at.
Get on it, Johnny.
Yeah.
Get on it.
Yeah. I'll put that in the list, man. But no, that'd be interesting, but not that I've thought about or looked at.
And have we put one around somebody's neck yet and tightened it up and to see if we get a full body effect?
I'm sure someone has somewhere. Probably not to see a strength effect, but I'm sure there's been tourniquets on necks.
Not that we're recommending.
Yeah, yeah.
Do not put a tourniquet around your neck or anybody else's neck. You've been warned.
Well, and I think that's a recommendation, of this. Every time I talk about this or talk to people about this, they get pretty jazzed, but again, I think getting people to understand how to apply it right and understand, limb occlusion pressures and, getting a tourniquet device that's falls under, because tourniquets are FDA regulated. And actually, the APTA is looking into this for me to make sure that it falls even within our practice act to do this. It looks like it does, but they've been kind of busy with a bunch of other stuff on Capitol Hill to get me the final decision yet. But, I think it's something, just don't run out there and start throwing stuff on patients because you can set yourself up for some problems.
Why wouldn't it be in our practice act in terms of, I realize strengthening is, but it's because we're causing occlusion or because of the measurement with the Doppler?
Because tourniquets are made to completely restrict blood flow in OR settings, and they are classified by the FDA, they're a class 3 device. So you're using it off-label use if you're using the tourniquet. If you're using something else, you're really probably using it way off-label, even if something that might not even have an FDA label. So that's one issue that just has to be cleared up. From what I heard from my friends over at ABTA, it seems completely fine, but it's so new to them. They just said, can you give us literature and let us kind of look at this first?
So we've also, this has been mostly extremities, right? Shoulders, arms, elbows, thighs, knees.
Right.
Obviously, our most common injuries that we see or dysfunctions that we see, pain that we see is neck, low back issues, hip issues, things like that. Is there any application at all to treating C-spine dysfunctions, L-spine dysfunctions, or even T-spine issues?
Yeah, I don't know if we could get that proximal. We might be, and I'm a little hazy on this, but there was a study. So just putting I'm going to go a long way to get to your answer maybe, but just putting a tourniquet on the limb and doing nothing seems to attenuate the atrophy that we see from non-weight bearing. And NASA's done a few of these studies, and there's been several other groups that have done these. And so we don't know why, but if you're going to be non-weight bearing and we put a tourniquet on, you might not have as much atrophy as not doing it. And it's probably related to the mTOR pathway. And when a myocyte dehydrates, then the mTOR pathway doesn't happen. But when the myocyte rehydrates, then mTOR or protein synthesis happens and you can attenuate atrophy. And so when you take the tourniquet off, the leg's still swollen. And if it was just venous congestion, the leg wouldn't stay swollen like that. And so from some studies, it looks like the myocyte does swell. Now, if you walk or ride a bike with a tourniquet on, you actually get some hypertrophy and some increases in strength. So increasing load starts to make that change a little bit. And one of the walk studies or the bike study showed that mechanical tension of doing it actually made the glute hypertrophy. And then if you start to actually put more load, the 20 or 30% rep max and lift weights, it looks like you start to get more of an effect in the leg. But then, there were a couple of studies out there, and one that showed that there was change of size, and I believe it was in the multifidi or one of the lumbar musculature. It's been a long time since I looked at that one. So if you want to get more proximal, you'd probably have to do more mechanical load and intensity further down the chain, or maybe it's specifically at that group. Maybe you're getting the systemic effect. Maybe it's just all this mechanical tension. Those proximal muscles are trying to help with something. But as of now, no one's really looked at it.
So obviously a lot of room for growth. And once you start developing programs and testing out in the clinic, you'll find out some new stuff. So speaking of that, Kyle, one of his other questions was that a few months ago you said, I'm guessing he's referring to you, Johnny, that there were some education certification opportunities. How's that coming along? Is there going to be something, and is it on the horizon?
Yeah, so I probably get at least 2 emails a week asking me how to do this, and I've got, I want to wrap this on my patient. Can I do this or that? And so after, the work I did with Clowney came out on ESPN, I just kind of got crushed with a lot of people asking. So I'm definitely going to, I've got a course that I'm trying to set up. It's almost done to go over the science and then all my clinical protocols, and then how to use a device, either using a handheld Doppler or using the actual Delphi device that has the Doppler in it. So that is going to be coming sooner rather than later. I've had several large healthcare centers where I know the orthopedic docs that are trying to get their centers trained up here pretty quick so they can try and do it.
Awesome.
Probably got 12 to 14 pro teams over the next couple of months I'm going to be working with. It's coming out quick, and that Delphi device will be ready. And so if people wanted to try that, then I think it would be a great thing to use in the clinic.
There you go, Kyle. Stop emailing Johnny. It's coming out. Just wait.
I think Kyle's the only person who emails me, so that's fine. On Twitter, at least. Somehow all these other people get my personal email or my work email.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Is that you, man? You posted it?
My bad. I got your phone number out there, your personal account. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So how much will that thing run? Is it, is there an arm one and a leg one, or is it configurable?
Yeah, and so this is all Delphi's thing, but it is it's almost identical to the one we use now. So it's a small little box. The original systems we used were these research tourniquets called Hokinson's, and they look like old 1980s stereos. They were giant, and the guys were wheeling them around the clinic. These are real small ones. They're just on a little pole, and you can hook up the arm or the leg to it, so it can do any of the limbs. And we just basically, we have them on the stations, are just sitting around. A patient will go grab one and take it to whatever exercise we have programmed or what study they're in. I think the price, it's a little bit steep, I think, but it's like $4,800, $4,900, something like that. But ours, we use them nonstop all day. We're up to 8 actual units now because we have so many patients that are doing it and getting sent to me to do it, and so many studies going on. And it's reimbursable, so that's another good thing.
That's pretty cool. So it's kind of getting one of those what are those treadmills called? The zero G treadmills where they try to
sell the Alter G. Alter G.
Yeah, 30 to 50 grand.
Well, that's for the low model. If you get the performance one, it's $100,000.
Yeah, I'll take my chances
with the Woodway treadmill.
Yeah, I'll take my chances with a $4,000 occlusion. tourniquet.
Yeah, yeah. You can just walk with it on and you'll see changes.
And that's kind of our gene.
Yeah.
Well, that's neither here nor there. But, Joe, since you bring it up, I do like to run. Just watch people run.
I don't think that's the same.
No?
Unless you're watching with occlusion.
Well, see, I empathize with my patients so much. So when they're running, I'm pretty much running. That's how I do it, Joe.
Nobody believes you.
Everybody believes me, if you mean by nobody. Anyways, enough about me. We have an awesome guest. So again, Johnny Owens is joining us. We're talking about blood flow restriction. So this is this seems like it's really up and coming. Obviously, you had that big story about the Houston Texans, and it was Clowney, you said, right?
Yeah, it was Jadeveon Clowney. And we're free to talk about it now.
Sweet freedom. And yeah. So he got better. You got some attention, and we're looking to, you know, I know I'm looking forward to seeing how this grows and evolves. And I definitely want to try it. I want to see how it feels, at least. I'll have to find my blood pressure cuff and practice. But if you're ever on the East Coast, let me know. I definitely want to try it out.
I might be up there with a certain football team that plays pretty good. So I'll let you know.
The Ravens?
Well, another one.
That's the only team on the East Coast that plays well. No other team exists.
So. I think one just won a Super Bowl, man.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That's pretty cool. Yeah, but yeah. Definitely. If you're down here, love to check it out.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you might be. Is this your main thing that you're working on? Is there any other cool stuff that you've got in the wings that you can talk about?
Another one that's cool. So this is what got me into this BFR is something that we invented called the IDEO, and it's the Intrepid Dynamic Exoskeletal Orthosis. That's a lot of name there. So we just call it the IDEO. And basically I was kind of seeing a lot of the limb salvage patients from the wars, and we were having a real problem with these guys and girls coming back after salvaging their limbs for a year or two and saying, you know, let's just go ahead and amputate. Thanks, guys, but you didn't really get me to running or doing higher level stuff. And so we developed this device that's basically looks like an orthotic on steroids. It's custom built to each patient, made out of carbon and Kevlar. And with it, we've been able to get, you know, guys and our service members back to duty, back to running, back to jumping. And we've shown in the literature now a reduction in the amputation rate by applying it. And so that's been probably the biggest advancement that we've seen, especially on the rehab side from these conflicts. And the military patented the device. We've received a ton of media, you know, been in 60 Minutes, Time Magazine, all that sort of stuff for that device. But a problem we had is when these folks were coming to get it, because primarily they were all being sent to see me to get in our program for it. If their thigh was weak, then there's a big knee moment whenever you try and do something. And if their thigh was weak, then they would not be able to use the device right. And failure was oftentimes meant an amputation. So that's where I was just really pulling my hair, just trying to figure out if there was another form of strengthening out there that I could do to get the thigh strength back. And that's what led me to find this blood flow restriction stuff. So the IDEO, if you Google IDEO, Center for the Intrepid or CFI, there's tons of videos. I think we have 12 publications now on it. Still have lots of studies trying to get better at it. And then the other thing I'm pretty big in is regenerative medicine. And that's what got me into this originally. And that was, we had a Marine who took an RPG to his thigh and had what we call a VML or volumetric muscle loss, almost lost his entire thigh.
Wow.
And was doing terrible. Was contemplating being an amputee. And for him, that would mean he would be a hip dysarthric. And so we did this off-label use of extracellular matrix material. We used a pig's subintestinal mucosa and implanted it under this guy's scar. And I took him through a rehab program, and he regrew soft tissue there and made functional changes, and he's not an amputee now. He's actually doing pretty well. But when we look back at it, and then now as we've explored it more in animal models, we probably weren't growing the soft tissue we wanted, we were growing fibrosis. For him, it worked because we kind of filled in the pothole with a bunch of scar, mm-hmm. large scar, and we showed it on CT that all grew. But now we've found some better techniques using what we call minced grafts, where we take just some of your own native musculature and mince it up and put it in these defects. And we're in a large animal model now, a pig model, and showing that we're regrowing some of the muscle and vein and vessels, or vessels and nerve, I mean. And then the other one that I'm really interested in is fibrosis. And I don't think we have anything even close to dealing with fibrosis as much as we kid ourselves in the rehab world that we are. Scar really wins. And so we probably need to look at another mechanism to deal with scar rather than mechanical. And it looks like pharmacology might be a way to go. And so we're getting ready to start a trial using a drug called Losartan to block what's called the TGF-beta pathway. And if you block TGF-beta, then you stop fibrosis. And so we could potentially apply this drug right after injuries or surgeries or trauma and hold off fibrosis for a while. We used to not think that muscle could regenerate. But now when we've been able to block TGF-beta, we're seeing that muscle actually has regenerative capabilities. It just never could regenerate fast enough because scar is so fast at its own lay down of its matrix that it blocks the muscle. And so, you know, if I can apply all these different things, a fibrosis blocker, a volumetric muscle loss builder, buffalo restriction training, and if that doesn't work, one of these exoskeleton devices, I've got a pretty good arsenal to help these service members with.
Now, does the trauma matter, how much trauma there is, or a surgical incision, clean scar, does that change obviously the fibrosing, how much and how, I guess, how you can reduce that process? I mean, if I remember my tissue physiology correctly, that the satellite cells carry the information to help regrow muscles. Am I remember that mm-hmm. correctly? And if that
PAC seven cells,
if they're not destroyed during the trauma, then there's still a chance. But if the satellite cells are gone, there really isn't a way to do it, is there?
No, yeah, you're right. And so, or if the void is filled up with fibrosis, because you know, at the end of the day, your body just wants to quickly heal up and to run away from a dinosaur. You know, we're still in that type of phase.
Some more
and
than
so,
others.
Yeah. So if it is already fibrosed, there's really not any room, even if you did have a satellite cell proliferation to happen, to regenerate. And so, satellite cells, to proliferate them, you know, one way you can do it is with strengthening. And so if you do a heavy, heavy bout of exercise, you kick off protein synthesis. And if you have a lot of protein synthesis going on, your body has these myogenic stem cells, your PAX7 satellite cells that come out that want to put another myonuclei into your muscle to help with that synthesis.
Now, is this something blood flow restriction training can help with as well?
Yeah. And so his name's Wernburn, a Scandinavian group, showed a really large increase of satellite cell proliferation in a BFR versus control group. And then they also showed that, you know, the graph from the satellite cell proliferation looked almost exactly like the graph for the strength gains. And so BFR looks like it does bring out those satellite cells, probably from the mTOR pathway. And one of our regenerative models, we actually just got funded for this grant to try BFR with this minced graft technique to see if we can, because that's the thing, if we can get a tissue in there that we want to grow in hypertrophy, the quicker we can make those satellite cells come out, the better off we're going to be. And so BFR would be a quick and easy way because I can't put them under a high load anyway. So it looks like another win-win.
Interesting. So realistically, if we wanted to start a BFR program in our clinic, or Ursa wanted to do it in Buffalo as part of his treatment, or he wanted to write an extensive blog on it and do a review, when do you think time frame wise that would be a possibility?
I guess it depends on how you want to go about it. And so, like I said, if it were me, you know, I would want to probably stick to a medically registered tourniquet just in case something happened. So that Delphi tourniquet would be a nice one to use because it's built and made for doing this. But there's other ways you can do it. And like I said, we use a Delphi tourniquet and a Doppler right now. This one, you wouldn't have to do that. And there's some practical applications out there that people have shown of using wraps and stuff like that. Again, I don't know, in a clinic setting on a patient, you know, it's not, you know, super standardized, and it's not a medically registered device. So anyways, these tourniquets will be available soon. I'll be teaching courses, hopefully, you know, quite a bit soon, that can help people if they want to learn more about it. And there's a ton of literature out there. And so if anyone wants to get boned up on the literature, I'm happy to share what I have too.
So where can people find you if they want more literature?
I'm on Twitter. I don't know, what was my handle? Johnny, you don't have to. Do you have to say at Johnny Owens or just Johnny? I think you just say Johnny Owens.
At Johnny Owens.
At Johnny Owens CFI. All right, good.
Let's get Johnny more followers.
Follow at Johnny Owens CFI. Now,
I don't mind. I don't mind giving out my email too, because
don't do that.
I like answering questions, but okay.
Don't do that.
Follow me on Twitter.
There you go. Don't do silly things like that. Now we'll put any information that Johnny feels comfortable with on the website therapyinsiders.com. So we'll have his Twitter handle, his email, his address, you know, all the normal stuff. So you can stop by, say hello.
My wife's cell phone number.
Yeah, exactly. But remember, he's in Texas and he goes to sleep with a six shooter.
Yeah. Barbecue and pistols.
By the way, I saw your brisket picture on Twitter. That's ridiculous. I had to use every single one of my fibers not to start talking to you about beef brisket.
Yeah, I know, man. Well, you know, all you Northeasterners are eating brisket nowadays, and you're making the prices go up down here. We actually have a Twitter. You got me freaking out about Twitter now. We have a brisket bandit in San Antonio. Some guy is like breaking into restaurants and stealing their briskets. They think it's a guy that has a food truck who can't afford to buy his own now because briskets got so expensive.
Man, I hope he has a delicious food truck if he's going to that trouble.
I know, right? Right.
So any closing questions for Johnny?
No, I mean, I'd be interested in taking courses. If you have a website or anything, I'd be happy to promote it too, because I know a lot of the guys who follow me on social media will be really interested in this. I think I'm just going to go crudely wrap my limbs in edge mobility bands and start working out now, actually, right after this. So
you got to do it right now.
I know. I'm really excited and very much intrigued to try it out, so I might do the same thing.
You know, it's...
I'm going to at least use a blood pressure cuff. Come on, man.
Yeah. The blood pressure cuff is really, you know, really, because we just looked at it, you know, trying it out, and some other people that I've talked to have tried it. It just doesn't hold the pressure very well. You know, the needles.
Gotcha. By design, probably.
Inherently start to leak, and they're not made to really hold on to. Yeah, and so, you know, you're not getting that metabolite response. I mean, it's totally different when you put on, like, a real tourniquet. You're just like, holy crap, this is freaking hard now. So there's a big difference. But I'll say this, you know, I've been a PT now since freaking 98, I've seen some pretty cool things happen, especially the last decade, you know, where I've been lucky enough to work. But I think for our profession and for our patients, this is really going to be something. And it seems very interesting. And the results we're seeing are really kind of blowing our minds. And the patients love it. You know, I'm having a kick. And I work with a pretty kind of austere group of young, hard-charging guys and girls. But we do have our dependents and our retirees that are coming through. They all really, really take to it and like it and feel like they're getting better too. So,
are you ready for your multi-million-dollar idea, Johnny?
Here, yeah, give it to me.
Coming at you. So,
is this the Jerry Durham piece?
No, this is not. This is my piece. I'm not giving Jerry any credit. You take that tourniquet, whatever it is, and you put some kind of sensor, Bluetooth sensor, in it, and you connect it to the iPhone or the new Apple Watch coming out. So then you can just control it via the phone, because they have blood pressure cuffs that are monitored and controlled via apps on the iPhone. You design it like that. Hell, you don't even need money. You make it, just design a prototype and do a Kickstarter campaign, which is what I did for my product.
That's pretty cool, man.
And you just, you know, you have to make it somewhat functional, and man, you'll raise a gazillion dollars for that.
Yeah, that'd be sweet, man. But
get on it.
Yeah, I don't, you lost me at make an app. but I think the Delphi group is actually already working on a smaller version of the one they have that is an app, and you know, looking at maybe even building protocols into it where it shuts off. That's another thing with this one they have. It has safety sensors in it, or safety things built into it, where it'll shut off after a set amount of time, just in case Mrs. Smith's, you know, doing her BFR and she passes out and you're not watching her. An hour later, she's sitting there with a tourniquet on her leg.
That'd be unfortunate.
Which wouldn't be that bad because you're not at full occlusion, and you know, some of these surgeries go 4 to 6 hours long anyways.
True.
But you'd rather not have it happen.
No, you wouldn't. That's a lot of paperwork. Nobody likes paperwork.
Yeah. Well, I would say too that it looks very safe. If you look at the totality of the research out there, there doesn't look like there's any worries of clotting. It actually looks like there's a reverse, almost a protective effect, that the you know, the anti-clotting factors really seem to kick in. There's, you know, there's some DOMS that you get with it, but nothing, it looks like there's any muscle breakdown from several studies that looked at as well. So I think it's pretty safe as long as we're doing it right.
There you go. So you said, just to summarize it, you said that usually you're at 20 to 30% of one rep max when you're exercising.
Yep.
Keep it on for, you said, what, like 5-6 minutes per exercise?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, use your common sense if you're trying this, if you're doing this. Just feel how much exertion is going on and what you're doing. And don't go crazy. Don't use your best, if you're a clinician, use your best clinical sense. If you're not a clinician, either talk to a clinician or just be careful if you're trying it. This is, as exciting as it is, it's still an evolving technique. And I know we're all going to be trying it and see where it goes.
Perfect, man.
I look forward to it, man. That was awesome. That's great information, and I'm not kidding. If you're out here, let me know. Let one of us know. I'd love to see it, try it out. You know, write a blog review on it, and see where it goes. This seems like pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Excited about it, Johnny. Thank you.
Are we still live right now?
Yeah, we're still live.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I am going to be in New York in May, but I don't even know the Northeast, how far apart that is from you guys. That's probably a little bit of a trip.
It's about 4 hours. It's not bad.
4 hours. Okay.
That's driving.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be working with a team over there. So I'll hit you up, but if not, when I'm closer to your area, maybe we can link up.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet you guys.
I'd take the drive with you, Gene.
Yeah, there you go. We're there. I mean, New York... You know, I don't have to be convinced too hard to make a trip to New York.
Cool. We'll put our skinny jeans on and go act like hipsters.
Absolutely.
My wife won't let me grow a beard though, so
who says we have to act?
Yeah.
Got my skinny jeans on now.
Cool. Nice. I can't wear them. I got a big butt.
Go big or go home. You're in Texas.
Yep.
All right, Johnny. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Great amount of information. I think you did an excellent job of breaking down the science without boring anybody. It was great. I definitely enjoyed listening to it. And
yeah, our listeners are going to like this a lot. There's a lot of good information there.
Absolutely.
Well, good, guys. Yeah, hopefully I think it was only the second podcast I've ever done, so hopefully I made you guys proud. But if y'all have any questions, feel free to hit me up. I appreciate y'all asking me to do this, so it's very, very cool.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And again, it's what's your Twitter handle?
At Johnny Owen CFI.
There you go. At Beef Brisket at Johnny Owen CFI. So check him out.
My one. My
other
one.
That's going to be your code name from now on, your nickname. Hey, yeah. Beef Brisket. All right. So, guys, thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. If you need more, we're at therapyinsiders.com. Again, I'm on Twitter at therapyinsiders, Joe at JoeDPT, and Urson, of course, you know, at the OMPT and themanualtherapist.com and 16 other sites that he has. He is literally everywhere. If you have any questions, feel free to ask on any one of those social media channels, on the website, therapyinsiders.com. We love the Twitter questions. We love all the emails that we've been getting. So this is about having a conversation, not just about us sending information your way. So let us know. And Johnny Owens, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. Y'all take care up there.